Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 145 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling WSU's Aaron Esser has the second best job in agriculture, too, during which Esser and I talk about wheat and a lot of other things, including wireworms. It is through wireworms, actually, that I came to admire Esser. For a while, it seemed to me he was the only person who was really paying attention to the problem. A quick primer. For many years, a chemical seed treatment that included lindane took care of wireworms in the Pacific Northwest, but the EPA pulled the chemical from the market in the early 2000s. For several years after lindane's loss, wireworms remained in check. Then they didn't. Esser began working on the problem in 2008, starting from the ground up with what I thought was a very innovative approach. He developed a method to trap wireworms that included using women's nylons, in the process answering the question of how many wireworms constitutes a problem. Following Esser's lead in the burgeoning challenge across the state, the Washington Grain Commission funded a special professorship to research control for the larva of the click beetle, a.k.a. wireworms. Turns out there are many species of click beetle, and therefore many different sorts of virulence when it comes to wireworm species. Products like Gaucho and Cruiser, both neonicotinoids, first appeared to deter wireworms. Subsequent research found that increasing the dosage of the seed treatments has a more lethal effect. Other products have also shown promise, but have not come to the market for various reasons. Esser holds out hope something better is coming, as you'll hear ahead. As we cruise the Wilkie Farm's 340 acres in his truck, I reminded Esser that 10 years ago, wireworms were the challenge that kept farmers up at night, but we're not hearing as much about them now. I ask if we've solved the problem.
I only wish. You know, I've only been working on wireworms since 2008, I think, is when I started my first wireworm study, and wireworms are still doing fine. I think farmers have seen success with the increased rates of neonics, but I can still find plenty of hot spots and things like that where I can do some of my wireworm research plots, and I'm really hopeful for some of them. That's one thing I think where farmers are going to benefit from new technology coming on the horizon is there's some different things that are lining up and hopefully will be available by the... I'm hoping, I have my fingers crossed for 2021 that will, I feel, will significantly improve our overall wireworm control across in the cereal grain system.
And so what's on tap?
There's a couple different products I think that may be coming down the line. I can't really talk about them too much yet, but I'm pretty excited about the results from them.
No, that's good news. A little mysterious, but good news.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's my ticket out of wireworm control to where I can get on to work on stuff I really enjoy.
I think I smell glucosinolates. Is this canola over here on the left?
Yes, this is field 4. We have canola in it. And right here we have a big wax study. We're looking at, I think there's seven or eight different canola varieties out here.
Is this spring or winter canola?
Oh, spring canola. We're looking at 7 or 8 different spring wheat canola varieties. We go all the way from this flag to the one the furthest over there. 4 replications. You know, just trying to figure out, we have, you know, I talked about weed control, and one of the cool things about canola and what it offers in rotation is not only a different type of plant, but it also offers some technology. You know, we went through all this stuff. We have Roundup Ready canola. We have Liberty Link canola. And this is the only opportunity that farmers have here in the Pacific Northwest to even use Liberty herbicide, which is a group 10. So it's something you can really utilize in rotation to really change up your whole herbicide practice.
Now, are you planting winter canola here?
I have winter canola in research plots, in some crop rotation stuff. Across the farm, not yet, but it's not out of the question.
And the reason I ask is because it just seems like it's so hard to get established in the fall.
I'm going to chuckle at that one, Scott, because I've had a hard time myself. 3 years ago in my winter canola study, I hate to admit it, but I'm the one that messed up and I sprayed Amanda canola with Roundup. Well, it's not a Roundup Ready canola, and it didn't do very well, Scott. The second year I planted the winter canola, those dang birds that Bill Schillinger always talks about came through and ate it, the horn larks. And last year on my winter canola plots, they came up, they looked good. I was a little concerned with some dry conditions, but the canola actually came up. And then we got hit with not one but two frosts that really finished most of it off. And so I'm kind of 0-for-3, and I was with Jim Davis up at a canola plot tour in Elmira, and they have some, you know, one spot we were standing in Elmira, and you could look out and you can see 13 different winter canola fields up there. They've really done well with it, and Jim Davis looks at me and goes, how come we can't do this at the Wilkie farm? I'm like, I don't know. It crushes me, but we can't for some reason.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Seems like some people have the key to the mystery.
And I've got my background in canola, and that one still stumps me once in a while, but we're not giving up on it, and I very much think it's an opportunistic crop. On this fallow that we're looking at here, if we were to get a mid-August rain, knock on wood for some of you people out there trying to harvest, but if we were to get that mid-August rain and really got good seed zone moisture across the whole field, I might go ahead and put some canola in. It's not off the table with this farm.
Uh-huh. And are you seeing any yield bump from the canola prior to wheat?
I have those research plots. I haven't fully analyzed them yet. But, you know, we have the one right in front of us where we're looking at spring canola, spring wheat, and spring chickpea. And then I have the sister one with winter canola, winter peas, and winter wheat. And on the spring one, we have seen the best yields come spring wheat. It'll be recrop winter wheat over the top of this. The best recrop winter wheat will be following chickpeas, followed closely by canola. And third will be spring wheat.
As we pass another canola field, is there any impact of the canola on wireworms?
You know, the question on any impact, I think there is. You know, will wireworms take out canola? Absolutely, they will take out canola. I've seen them take out flax, and I've heard reports of irrigated circles in Montana completely demolished by wireworms. But the one thing I think canola does is when mama click beetle emerges from the ground and is looking for a place to lay her eggs, you know, she don't like canola that much. She'd prefer a cereal grain or a grassy weed situation. So she might pack her bags and leave and go lay her eggs elsewhere. Well, in the life cycle of a wireworm where it's 5, you know, anywhere from 4 to 7 and up 10 years, you know, it takes a little bit of that. But I think in the long run, incorporating those type of crops in rotation can help throw the, you know, at least those emerging beetles, it may get them to move over to the neighbor. And so that's been interesting following this for multiple years and multiple cycles. And when you look at the spring wheat, the one thing I'm going to end up with by the time I get to year 6 of this is I'm going to have a lot more downy brome in this one right here than I'm going to in these two plots that we're looking at with chickpeas and canola. So the weed control obviously is a lot easier in here. That may not show up in the economics in the short term, but it would in the long-term situation.
I mean, I'm looking at this canola field. It looks pretty healthy. I mean, is this the kind of crop that a farmer wants on his farm?
I have my fingers crossed. It does look good. And, you know, it's not going to be the biggest crop we've had, but it's definitely not going to be the lowest yielding. And it kind of surprises me because we really haven't had any rain since we seeded. We got a dumped on about 2-3 weeks after seeding with an inch of rain, and after that I don't think we've got any more than a tenth in any one event, and it's been extremely sparse and dry, so it looks a lot better than I anticipated it looking.
Now, is this an area that is ripe for winter peas, and are you investigating these new winter peas?
Well, if you look off on just on the east side of the Wilkie farm over there is Owine's winter peas. He has I don't know how big his field is, but he has a field of a man. Howard Nelson's had his winter pea research on this farm. We've had winter peas 3 years ago on this farm. I'm not scared to put them in again. You know, I have spreadsheets where, you know, I talk about we need to generate revenue. And if I felt peas would give me equal revenue to winter wheat and solve some of those issues, I would be happy to put winter peas back in the ground and in rotation. And now that I have my, now that we have our own drilling equipment, that's more feasible than ever. Because that, too, is a little bit earlier seeding than what you do with your with winter wheat. And winter peas, now we have our combine, they're seeded often earlier than you can get with them with winter wheat. It's one of those reasons I really push to get our own equipment on this farm is so those things can still be an absolute viable option for us.
And you have this big new building now. How did you get this building built? I remember coming out here in the old days and frying under the sun or freezing in the cold.
You know, I named it Roger Shed after Roger Shuffles. His dad Jerry and his aunt Carol Quigg are the ones that donated the funding to put that building up. And I really, a huge thanks to them and their support and seeing the vision that we have for this facility. It really is, and that's allowed us to expand what we do on the farm. Without the building, I don't want a lot of equipment. I didn't want another tractor if it's just going to sit out in the sun and rot. And now that we have a building to keep it in and keep equipment in and work in it, it makes it absolutely nice. And security, being able to lock some stuff up. And, you know, I really encourage researchers to come up here and participate. I showed you some of the small plot research that we have on the farm. We've had a lot of graduate students come up and have research projects on this facility, and that's really what I want. And having a shed like that where they, you know, if you're out working in the sun, some place to go inside in the shade and catch a little break is absolutely essential. So it's been an absolute blessing.
Has there been any impact to you on this farm in terms of the consolidation of the elevator industry in the state? I mean, you know, during my time in agriculture, we've gone from about 20, 25 elevator companies to what are the big five at this point?
I think I got Highline Grain to work with up here, Scott. That's where I take my seeding out of Highline Grain. All right, I take my grain to Highline. I pick up my seed now from Highline. You know, in the years past, I would actually split some of it up and take some of it to Reardon Seed Company here in Davenport. I'd take some to Davenport Union, and I'd split it up depending on crop and things like that based on what the Wilkie Farm Committee recommended. And I would get seed from Reardon Seed Company. I would get seed from Davenport Union. And I would get seed from Dan McKay. And now it's a little bit, you're right, it's a little bit more difficult to break it up, but they've been really good to work with. They've been very gracious to work with. I've host Highline Grain. Howard Nelson from his days at Central has been on this farm for years doing research. And that's what this facility is for. The university is not the only one that does research, so we've allowed those private companies to come in if it fits with what I call the mission of the farm and I feel will benefit growers in this area. I'll let them put their research plots out here. It's something I don't have to worry about then, as long as I can get the information on them.
We're looking at a tremendous field off here to the right, a wheat field. I don't see a weed in it. Tell me about this field here.
This is a neighbor on the back side of the farm, and he's done a great job with his weed control. He's done a lot of different things back here. You know, when you say no weeds out here, it's a benefit because he put spring crop in here as well. Back behind us is his other field where it's in spring wheat. He does a mixture of no-till and tillage. Right up here we're coming to his fallow where it's very minimum till fallow. He's done a good job of rotating it, keeping it clean.
Now, I mean, although you have these strip trials, which are these long, acres-long pieces of crop, you also have plots out here. We're right here next to some plots. What are the plots for?
We talked about the value of the Wilkie Farm. I spent a lot of time talking about 3- and 4-year rotations and weed control. But one of the things I think that's extremely valuable about this facility is we have a lot of small plot research. I annually certify about 20 acres worth of research like this every year. And right here we have Howard Nelson with Highline Grain has his chickpea study, his variety trials. And then over here we have Jack Brown from University of Idaho has his spring canola variety trial to supplement what we're doing on the big trials. Behind us in the winter wheat, Aaron Carter has his breeding trial on the Wilkie farm. So his intermediate breeding location is now on the Wilkie farm. So we host a lot of different things, and that's one of the reasons I need to have it clean. That way when these guys come up to put research plots on, the last thing Aaron Carter wants to see in his breeding trials is a weed-infested mess. And so that was one of the reasons behind the emphasis to really emphasize weed control on the farm is to so we can host more small plot research.
So what are we looking at here?
This is the winter wheat part of it, of the weed control stuff. So you can see we have the Chad Shelton has his coaxium weed in over here. So we have those plots. Ian Burke and Drew Lyon have various plots across the farm in this winter wheat. We have broadleaf weed control. We have grassy weed control studies. Some of them are multi-year studies looking at pre-plant, some different herbicides looking at where after you go and put the herbicide on after you plant. Looking at some of that. Some of the stuff that they're using, Rise Up Smart Grass, trying to force the seed bank, germinate it, and then plant wheat. So they're doing a lot of various things over here on this side of the farm. It's been great to see a lot of different activity. They really filled up this 15 acres of stuff.
Although I missed the field day, I did talk to some people who attended, and they said it was a great field day. The only problem was not enough people attended. I'm curious about the declining attendance at these field days of WSU. I mean, does it matter?
The year before, we had almost record attendance. The year before that, for the soil one, was almost record attendance here. I was disappointed. We were down about 30, 40 people from where I thought we would be. I think we had 60 who signed up for it. And that was, you know, within extension, I've never got caught up in numbers, but those 60 people who attended, I think, walked away with information that would be truly beneficial to them and their operation. So that's really what we want to have with those educational outreach events. And there's so much stuff going on, Scott. I had 20-something tours in June. Almost every day of the week you can go to a plot tour. So there's so much opportunity to get information.
So, Aaron, for the last couple of years, you have been the, was it 2 years? Director of the variety testing program, or was it 1 year? I can't remember. 2 years, hasn't it been?
It feels like about 5 years, but it's been a little over a year and a half for two field seasons. I've been running the statewide variety testing program. It's been a great experience. I've really enjoyed it. And when you talk about why I had the field day on weeds, when you look across here, it doesn't look like it needs to be on weeds. This is relatively clean. When you start driving around the state across eastern Washington, there's some really scary situations out there. And I'm really fortunate to what fields are looking like here in my area of Lincoln and Adams County. I don't see near the issues we're having as what some of those people to the south of us are having. So it's been fun doing this variety testing program, just getting to meet a lot of different people, a lot of people to interact with, different people, and seeing different production systems. It's really opened my eyes and some of the other things that are out there. You know, you can sometimes get trapped up in your own little winter wheat fallow 3-year type rotations and 2-year rotations, what we have here in Lincoln County and Adams County.
And now that we have a new variety testing program director, where are you going to spend that extra time?
Sleeping, resting, catching up. You know, it's never been a shortage of something to do, Scott. That's not been an issue. There's a few things I really want to dedicate some more time to. You know, I've had discussions about farm stress. That's one of the areas I want to throw some of my time to it, is working on those situations. Fertilizer, yield, pushing the yield a little bit more is one of the areas I really want to put some of my effort on. You know, continue talking integrated weed control and making sure that we have situations where we're not fighting those herbicide-resistant weeds and we're using good herbicide rotational programs. There's not a shortage of stuff to do. The other thing I'd like to do is more just on the economics. Production, you know, and the Wilkie Farm Production Report, and doing more enterprise budgeting. Each and every year there's been more and more need for enterprise budgeting. So that's another thing I'd like to spend a little bit more time on.
As you heard, even with his duties as interim director of the variety testing program completed, Esser has no shortage of research projects and educational efforts where he'd like to devote his time. Enterprise budgeting, which refers to a listing of all estimated income and expenses associated with a specific enterprise or crop in order to provide an estimate of its profitability, is a great way to differentiate yield from income and help farmers know if their practices make long-term fiscal and agronomic sense. I hope you enjoyed this two-part podcast, episodes 144 and 145, entitled WSU's Aaron Esser Has the Second Best Job in Agriculture, about my conversation with the Adams-Lincoln County Extension agronomist, who has a lot of other titles too. Please join me again next week for another episode of Weed All About It!
Don't like chemicals, don't like killing. Look in your kitchen, the story there's chilling. Plant food, Windex, mouse bait too. Mr. Clean, easy off, even pet shampoo. You wanna be a hypocrite? Just forget you have the shit. We feed you.